Today on Maine Calling, efforts to restore fish migration in Maine. Saturday is World Fish Migration Day, and alewife lovers in Maine have special reason to celebrate this weekend. Today, the state holds a ceremony to mark the return of alewives this spring to China Lake for the first time since 1783. This is happening after a major effort to remove or alter six dams. There are also major restoration efforts underway or planned for the St. Croix River and Sebattis River, as well as smaller culvert replacement projects ongoing throughout the state. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will learn about these restoration projects, fish migration, the sea-run species found in Maine, and where you can take part in events this weekend. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling on Demand is made possible by Welch & Forbes, working with clients to manage the full range of events that come with building wealth, from investments to trustee services. More at WelchForbes.com. Maine General, with you for expert sports medicine and surgical and non-surgical orthopedic care. MaineGeneral.org. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, strengthening Maine's coastal and island communities through education, health, and support. Learn more at SeacoastMission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. There is something primal and inspiring about the sight of migratory fish making their way from the sea up through rivers and streams. In the past couple decades, Maine has made great progress towards restoring sea-run fish populations, and the work continues. Today, fish migration is our topic on Maine Calling. Joining me, Molly Payne Wynn, director of the Freshwater Program with the Nature Conservancy in Maine, and Sean Ledwin, director of Sea Run Fisheries and Habitat for the Maine Department of Marine Resources. We invite you to join the conversation. Send us an email, talk@mainepublic.org. Post a comment on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Welcome to all of you here today on Maine Calling. Sean, I'm going to start with you. This afternoon, there's a big ceremony. This is a big day in Maine. Tell us about what's happening at China Lake.
Thanks, Jennifer, for the invitation. Yes. Yeah, it's a really exciting event this afternoon with my boss, the Commissioner Kelleher, the governor, and some other dignitaries. It's the first time in over 200 years that sea-run alewives are able to access the China Lakes. And there was a 10-year process to restore six passageways into that system, and they've finished the last one, and so they're kind of welcoming the fish back after that long hiatus. And so we're really excited to celebrate that with a lot of partners, and particularly the town of Vassalboro and the Maine Rivers was really instrumental in getting that project done, amongst many other partners. So yeah, very exciting.
The fact that you say it's 10 years, that's an illustration of how challenging this is. That, you know, even when there's a lot of goodwill and a lot of people who want to make something happen, you can't snap your fingers and make it happen.
Yeah, that's right. You know, I think every project was different. There's kind of a combination of dam removals and technical fishways, which are ladders essentially that get fish ascended over a dam. Lots of different landowners, a lot of different opinions, a lot of opinions that have changed over time. So yeah, it's a really inspiring project, and you know, commend everyone for taking it on and bringing it to its completion. So I have the exciting job after this show of finding a net so the governor can catch some alewives. So,
all righty. I wish you luck with that project. Molly Payne Wynn, and not to One up, Sean, but a week from today, you're going to be part of something else exciting. You're going to be headed down east. I know that there's another project that another, I guess, a signing ceremony in another part of the state. Tell me what's going on the St. Croix River.
Yeah, and actually, Sean will be there as well as members of the Passamaquoddy tribes, both in the in Maine. So the Passamaquoddy at Sipayic and Indian Township join the First Nation, the Biscuto Makati, in a signing ceremony that's really a demonstration of committed partners to seeing restoration happen on the main stem Scudic River. So it's really exciting. The Milltown Dam, which is the lowermost dam on the St. Croix or Scudic River, is actually slated for removal this summer. And the Alewife Run in that river has the potential to be the largest in North America, if not the world. And so it's a really exciting time. There's a lot of eyes being turned to this particular opportunity for a really wide, broad scale river restoration opportunity. And as Sean has already touched on, you know, these projects are complex, they're complicated, there's many opinions. And this signing ceremony is really, I see it as sort of a first step in a commitment to seeing what's possible in terms of restoring the river.
The Milltown Dam, slated for removal this summer. Do you know the timeline? Do you know when that will come down exactly?
Yeah. So I think they're still securing their final permits. But yeah, I believe they're trying to get started this June. And I think they'll do the bulk of the removal, and then there'll be it's on what's historically called Salmon Falls. And the site's been altered so much that they're going to do a few years of testing just to make sure fish can still navigate the river as it is now, and make some modifications if necessary. But I think it's looking pretty good to get started this year, and they're on a pretty fast time frame. So that'll be really exciting once that happens.
Well, let's broaden the conversation out a little bit, and I'll start with you, Molly. You know, both of these projects, you've used the word, and we've talked about the species, alewives, but Molly, there are 12, I understand, sea run species in Maine. What are those species? And talk to me about their importance to the rivers in Maine, to the ecosystem of Maine.
Yeah, great question. You're going to put me on the spot to remember all 12 off the top of my head. But we have these really incredible sort of massive migrations. And it's kind of in a series in Maine. So it starts really early in January with tomcod, and December, January, when tomcod start migrating in. And then we turn to rainbow smelt, which start coming into our coastal rivers and exploring potential spawning and rearing habitat. And then come the alewives. And those are what are sort of moving most right now in our rivers. And they're coming in by the hundreds of thousands. So it's a really incredible sight to see the alewives and blueback herring, so they're known collectively as river herring, coming up from the coastal ecosystems and up into our rivers. American shad and Atlantic salmon tend to move into our rivers next. Sea lamprey, native sea lamprey, and what am I missing, Sean? Sturgeon, shortnose and Atlantic sturgeon. Striped bass and American eel. And so it's sort of a progression of these fish species that spend part of their life cycle in the marine environment and part in the freshwater river systems. And so as they're moving up, sort of starting in the early spring months, and they are bringing lots of nutrients from the marine ecosystem. The osprey, the eagles, the seals, otters are all feeding on these fish as they're coming up through. Folks listening may have noticed a lot more bird activity recently, especially along our rivers, and especially where dams are in place and the fish tend to sort of congregate and stall out in their migration, you can see lots of sort of herring gulls and cormorants that are congregating around these places, feeding on these river herring as they're coming up through.
Are all of these species using the same rivers, or are certain rivers used by different fish?
I would say for the most part, the sort of collective of sea run fish use most of our coastal rivers. And that's one thing that's really sort of important and incredible about the restoration opportunity on our rivers in Maine, is that we do still have all 12 native species of these fish present and reproducing. And so the restoration potential along the coast of Maine in our rivers is really incredible, because the fish are still there. So if we can just let them access the habitat that they need to reproduce and keep coming back to these rivers, then they will succeed.
Calling in now is Shannon Estenos. She is Assistant Secretary for Fish, Wildlife, and Parks with the U.S. Department of the Interior. Thanks for joining us, Shannon.
Good morning, Jennifer. It's great to be with you.
Can you tell us about the federal infrastructure investments that will go towards supporting river ecosystems? How is that going to be distributed?
Yes, absolutely. Happy to. So President Biden signed the bipartisan infrastructure law 6 months ago. And of course, we've hit the ground running, putting those dollars to work all over the country. And in my world, as the Assistant Secretary for Fish and Wildlife and Parks, the bipartisan infrastructure law includes record-setting investment in fish passage, which is exactly the topic of your conversation today. Over the next 5 years, the bipartisan infrastructure law is going to invest $200 million in removing obsolete, unsafe structures in rivers and streams across the country, to provide numerous overlapping benefits. So not just the obvious benefit of increasing fish passage, but also increasing, you know, access to nature, improving public safety, improving flood mitigation, for example. And so we just last month announced the very first $38 million pot of bill funding for fish passage. That's going to support 40 projects in 23 states, including in Southeast Maine, to remove structures and start reconnecting and restoring rivers and streams across the country.
And are you ready to talk about a specific restoration project in Maine? There's one on the Sebattis River, correct?
There sure is. So the Sebattis River, we're investing in this first tranche, $350,000. To remove two dams on the Sebattis, which is, of course, a tributary to the Androscoggin River. And first of all, both of these dams, the Uppertown Dam and the Remnant Mill Dam, currently pose safety hazards. So we'll be eliminating those safety hazards. We're going to be reducing flooding risk by removing those dams. And we're, you know, including watershed restoration, increasing and restoring passage for Atlantic salmon, river herring, and then other species that are important to spawning in the entire Androscoggin watershed. And really, this project on the Sebattis is kind of a perfect showcase project for what the fish passage program can do in rivers across the country. Removing these obsolete structures, levees, dams, culverts, sometimes we can restore passage across many, many, many miles of river. So this is the kind of investment that the bipartisan infrastructure law is making in natural infrastructure resilience and in hard infrastructure resilience. So it's just an incredibly exciting time to be in the business of restoring fish populations, restoring river watersheds, restoring resilience. We're just incredibly grateful, you know, that the president signed this law, you know, into law.
You mentioned that this is the first tranche. When will the second round be announced? And do you have any sense of whether there will be more funding for whether it's dam removal projects or culvert replacement projects, that sort of thing, here in Maine?
The next tranche of projects is coming very quickly. Early fall is when we'll announce the next tranche of projects. Jennifer, I don't know if there's a main project in the next tranche, but we are doing everything we possibly can to get the word out. I am traveling all summer, visiting as many Fish Passage projects as I can to let communities and states and tribal communities know and local governments know that this funding is available. And I have to tell you that the projects I've visited so far, the excitement is really through the roof. Folks who work on these kinds of projects understand the incredible benefits that an infrastructure project like this, like these, can produce at the very local level. So we're just really excited about it, and we're doing everything we can to get the word out, let folks know that these dollars are available.
This is Assistant Secretary for Fish, Wildlife, and Parks with the U.S. Department of Interior, Shannon Estenos. I'm going to ask my guests, Sean Ledwin from the Department of Marine Resources and Molly Payne Wynn from the Nature Conservancy, if either of them have questions for you. Do either of you have a question for the Assistant Secretary? Sean, go ahead.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Yes. Thank you for joining us. And we'd certainly share in the excitement of the program overall, and then the specific projects you guys are funding in the Sebattis. The program started off with an acknowledgement of some celebrations going on the China Lakes projects, mm-hmm. and I see the Sebattis as not moving in that direction with multiple projects. Going over a period of time, we've been kind of cooking with gas there, and this funding certainly helps move that forward. So I just wanted to say thank you for all your efforts, and we look forward to continuing to see new opportunities through the infrastructure bill and communicating with your department and others on how to best utilize funds and bring money to Maine for a lot of our great projects here.
Well, thank you, Sean. And let me say that, in addition to our investment in Fish Passage, the bipartisan infrastructure law has other programs and other dollars that are going to directly impact Maine. So, for example, there are dollars in the bipartisan infrastructure law to help restoration efforts and increase the recreation use of trails in the Great Meadow Wetland of Acadia National Park. We've got $4 million directly from the bipartisan infrastructure law to support outdoor recreation and conservation in Maine. So, and the beauty of these programs, in addition to just the benefits that they deliver on the ground to communities in all over the country, is that they are there to leverage the incredible investments made by partners, states, tribal communities, private philanthropy, local governments. It's all about pulling these dollars together and making really big things happen with these strategic investments. And that's really the power of the bipartisan infrastructure law. So that's the other thing that makes it so exciting, is that we're really working directly with folks on the ground to identify where these priority projects are, and then helping them leverage their own investments to make big things happen.
Shannon, thanks so much for calling in. Shannon Estenos, Assistant Secretary for Fish, Wildlife, and Parks with the U.S. Department of Interior. We are going to take a quick break. More discussion about fish migration and restoration projects on Maine Calling. We'll be right back. And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We are learning about sea-run fish in Maine, and we are learning about river restoration projects. With us today, Sean Ledwin, who is Director of Sea-Run Fisheries and Habitat with the Department of Marine Resources, and Molly Payne Wynn, Freshwater Program Director with the Nature Conservancy in Maine. Share your comments and questions via email, talk@mainepublic.org, comment on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-399. 3566. I'm going to go to a question, an email from Carl. Carl says, the hundreds of abandoned dams in Maine, which prevent fish passage, I knew I was going to have trouble with that, result in environmental, economic, and quality of life damages, are not being taxed. I own an old New England style barn. It no longer has functionality to operate in an economical manner to raise livestock, similar to these dams that are abandoned because they can't compete to saw logs or mill grain. Yet my barn is assessed as a structure on which I pay property taxes. Dam owners should be assessed on the damage costs they do to the economy and environment. I can tear down or burn my barn to avoid property tax. Dam owners can tear down their dams or pay the tax. And I'm wondering, this email from Carl reminds me, Sean, of a story I did years and years ago as a young reporter in Maine. And the state of Maine at the time was trying to map how many dams there were in Maine. They didn't even know because, you know, the state has been settled for so long and people just used to build dams on their property. Has there been any progress in that, or are there still so many dams that we don't even know?
Yeah. There has been quite a bit of progress on that. And actually the Nature Conservancy and Molly's group have gone out and done extensive surveys of some dams and then road stream crossings throughout the entire state, and have a lot of geographical information and other things that can help us prioritize projects and address the highest priority projects. The caller's question is a good one. You know, other states have programs like that. We don't have one here in Maine. I know there's been a lot of discussion about addressing that issue and incentivizing and disincentivizing certain activities, but thus far there's not really a program in place to, as he's recommending, but it's certainly worth something considering.
Joining us now is Josh Reut, who is Senior Conservation Scientist with the Nature Conservancy in Maine. And Josh, you're joining us today from Portugal. What are you doing there?
Yeah, Jennifer, this is really fun. I'm here at an international conference on dam removal. It's one of the other World Fish Migration Day events, in addition to Sean's and Molly's multiple events. So we've got people from countries all over Europe and the U.S. Learning more about dam removal and learning a lot from some of the stuff that we were just talking about that happened in Maine. It's really cool. So some of the stuff that we started 10, 15 years ago is starting up and really taking speed here. And some of the funding.
Oh, shoot. We're losing you a little bit. Darn. Well, we try to get Josh back, Molly, why don't we turn to you and have you?
There's a similar track with the EU and huge amounts of funding to help states.
Why don't we have you, Josh, join us by phone? But Molly, why don't we talk about some of the events going on? Because Saturday is, World Fish Migration Day?
World Fish Migration Day. Yeah, it's super exciting. And there's actually a growing list of events that are happening around the state of Maine. We're super hopeful that listeners in the Augusta area will join us, the Nature Conservancy, with folks from U.S. Fish and Wildlife and DMR at the Bicentennial Park in Augusta from 12 to 4 on Saturday. We're hosting a fun, family-friendly event in celebration of World Fish Migration Day. There's also various activities that are there's film screenings on the Bagaduce River. There are paddles being organized so people can dust off their canoes and kayaks and be part of community paddling events to celebrate the return of the fish. It's a really exciting time to sort of be able to get out in the world of Maine and see these fish runs for yourself. There's a list of events that are happening for World Fish Migration Day, which is a global event, and it takes place around the globe on the same day. There's events happening, I believe, in over 75 countries around the world. And worldfishmigrationday.com has a map that shows all of the events that are part of that celebration, and folks can actually zero in on Maine and see a list of all of the events and details for each that are happening locally for them. So it's super exciting, very celebratory, and it really is just an incredible event for us here in Maine to take part of that connects us to the global stage and how this work is making an impact across the world.
Josh, I'm going to try to go back to you. And I think what you were telling us is that places around the world, other countries, other communities are looking to Maine for guidance, that we are actually a leader in this issue, in leading the way in clearing rivers for fish restoration.
Yeah, absolutely. I hope I come in clear now. Sorry,
yes.
You can only do so much with the university connection. But there are people all over the world that have been inspired by projects like the Kennebec and the Penobscot restoration, and they are trying to replicate those efforts. And in some ways, some countries are exceeding it, and others are still learning. But today at the conference, there was dozens of people coming up to ask about how we launched the way we did in Maine, from a couple of dams to looking at whole watersheds and whole systems for road stream crossings and barriers, and finding tools and funding sources to help people do this more. So it's pretty exciting, and I can't wait to report back some of the results from the EU work that's coming up next week.
Well, I thank you so much for taking time from your conference in Portugal to call us. That was Josh Reut with the Nature Conservancy in Maine. Thank you so much.
Thanks, everyone.
I'm going to go to Hancock and Brett. Hi, Brett. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Hi, Molly and Sean. This is a great program, and it's good to hear you guys on the radio. I work with the Downy Salmon Federation, so we'll get to spend time with Molly and Sean on different projects. And I just wanted to hit on a few things. One, World Fish Migration Days for those way down east is going to be a alewife festival the next 2 days, so Friday and Saturday in Pembroke on the banks of the Penimaquan. So if you're in the area, come by and visit. But I also just wanted to highlight the partnership investment parts of what some of the earlier, what the secretary had said and what Molly had said. And these projects are driven by partnerships. I mean, the Penimaquan, where this event will be, there's a fishway that's owned by the state of Maine that was repaired with funds from the federal government, from tribal government, from Nature Conservancy, from the community, from the agencies, and from private donors. All these projects take a lot of partners, and they represent big investments. So much so, I think this is a big piece of this year in Maine around fisheries, was a national listing of Maine salmon rivers, which are, you know, our rivers, our salmon rivers. We're listed as one of the most endangered rivers in this country because of fish passage issues, is one of the major reasons. And really because of concerns with one dam owner, Brookfield Renewables, and how they operate their dams on the Union River, which is a big salmon river in eastern Maine, and the Kennebec and the Penobscot. So we need to keep these partnerships going and keep making investments. But we also need to make sure that the business owners who are benefiting from our resources are doing and are respecting these resources like the rest of us do, and being part of those partnerships, because we really, you know, we'll have lots of fish, more than we've had in centuries in this state and in our oceans. But we won't keep salmon, and we won't return to sort of what we, our potential is, if we don't make some really big investments and decisions on these big rivers. So thanks for all the work that everyone does, and hopefully see some folks in Pembroke tomorrow for Alewife Days.
Brett, thanks for your call. I'm going to move on to an email from William. William writes, encourage lamprey eels? My personal experience is that these critters are voracious and generally unpleasant. Are we sure that any of these 12 species are inappropriate to our lakes? I'm going to let you take that one, Sean.
I think I have a secret, preference for eels for a lot of reasons. I think they're one of the coolest species around. They're these prehistoric things with giant fangs that look horrifying, but they come back to Maine's rivers around this time of year and act as ecosystem engineers. They build these big nests with their mouths, which is pretty spectacular. And a lot of other fish like brook trout and salmon actually use those same reds. The young ones are blind. They're called amacetes, and they're blind for most of their life and live in the riverbeds for 3 to 7 years. And they kind of act like the earthworms of the riverbed and provide a lot of food for other species. They move at night, which is interesting and also has implications with some of the ways we run fishways at the dams, where, you know, you might see a lot of sea lampreys below the dams, but not above them, because maybe they're not operating their fishway at night. So I think they're really neat. There's a gentleman in Maine that's collecting the little ones for biomedical research down in Boston, to help with cancer research and things. So I think I understand they're pretty ugly and weird, but I think they bring a lot to just with themselves and also to all the other species that we care about. So
I'll just add too that I think sea lamprey do get a bad reputation because they are considered invasive in the Great Lakes. And they're definitely native to Maine for all the reasons Sean mentioned, like they're a critical part of the ecosystem. So definitely encouraged to read up about native sea lamprey. And American eel too, which are a separate species, are also just a really fascinating creature, albeit a little bit creepy to think about them swimming with you when you're out enjoying your local swimming hole in Maine this summer. But they're just incredible parts of our ecosystems here in Maine, and definitely worth exploring more about them.
We will go to Brian in Kennebunk. Hi, Brian, go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Jennifer. Thanks for having me. I appreciate this. So I live in Kennebunk, and we have a river called the Mousam River that flows through it. And there are three dams where their licenses have expired just last month. They are currently owned by Kennebunk Light and Power, and they're the ones that had the licenses up until last month. And the dams have been studied and determined that they have no real market value regarding hydropower. And so there's been a big push to remove the dams and free up, a lot of spawning ground up the river. And right now, the Kesslen Dam is completely obsolete, and the migratory fish get stuck at the base every year. You can always take pictures. You can always see the fish. And FERC just recently extended the license, and it could be indefinitely. There's no reason for having these dams anymore. And, it just seems like a lot of time is being wasted on not removing these dams. So just wanted to find out.
And when you say FERC, do you mean the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission? Molly, do you know what the status is about the Mousam River? Is this
I do not, but I will say that this example brings to mind sort of a lot of the other challenges with mainstem dams in Maine. And we know that there are challenges with these dams. There's also a lot of values associated with in-river structures too. And even though, I think the caller's thinking sort of multi-dam and at scale. And I think that there are a lot of solutions available to us in 2022. These projects are, thinking about a whole river system and restoration and thinking about fish passage, energy generation, dams, dam removal. These projects are all really challenging and they're complex. It's nothing new for us here in Maine. We're known as a state for taking on complex ecological challenges. And so, I think that there are creative solutions out there. I don't know in particular about this, the Mousam. I don't know if Sean has any comment to add.
We've been involved in that project for a while. And I think the caller did a good quick description of what was going on. So, you know, we weighed in on that and asked that Kennebunk Light and Power provide some level of fish passage at those projects, you know, through the decommissioning process or after the process. We'd like to continue to work with the community down there and see what options are available, and we could potentially leverage some of these resources that are going to be available in the next 5 years through the infrastructure funds and other opportunities. So I know there's a, I know it's pretty complicated, and there's a lot of, you know, people that have, you know, homes on impoundments and, you know, don't want to see changes there, and a lot of other issues around those structures. But we're certainly hoping to come up with a kind of a balanced approach where everybody can win something there. So,
Brian, thanks for your call. We are going to take a quick break. Mm-hmm. We are talking about fish passage on Maine Calling. We'll be right back. And welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You are listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, we are talking about the work being done to improve river habitat for the health of the sea run fish population. My guests, Molly Payne Wynn with the Nature Conservancy in Maine and Sean Ledwin with the Maine Department of Marine Resources. Join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page or to Instagram. You got to be quick if you're going to do so. And we have lots of questions coming in. Before we get to those, though, really quickly, Molly, I'll turn to you. We've talked a lot about bridges and dams. And I know how important those are, dam removal. But we haven't talked a lot about culverts. And I know that very slowly the Department of Transportation and cities and towns throughout Maine have been trying to upgrade culverts, make them larger. How important is this work to make sure that culverts are large enough in every single case?
Yeah, it's a really great question, Jennifer, and I'm glad that you brought it up. I often think about the work with culverts and making sure that they're appropriately sized in the ways that they connect to climate change. And so one of the ways that we know climate change is impacting us here in Maine is that it's bringing on more frequent and severe storm events. And with that tends to come increased flooding. And that's really challenging for our existing road infrastructure, especially where culverts, where roads and streams intersect. And I'm sure that most of the listeners tuning in today know really well how often single roads are often the only route in and out of communities. And so when those flood, when the road overtops and people can't get to in and out of where they need to be, it's just a really big problem. And so it's not only sort of these undersized structures are not only blocking critical habitat for aquatic species, but they have the potential to really block emergency services and transportation routes for human communities as well. So I think that we heard a little bit about the infrastructure dollars that are about to land in Maine to sort of help us as a state and as a nation really upgrade these infrastructure crossings and culverts. I think we're on the edge of a really tremendous opportunity to align not only goals that municipalities and communities might have to upgrade their road infrastructure, but to align those with ecological goals so that we can ensure connectivity for our aquatic species as well. So we're sort of building in and building natural climate solutions when we're creating crossings that are of appropriate size to allow the rivers and streams to act like they should, as nature intended, if you will.
We're going to go to State Representative Arthur Bell, who's calling in from Yarmouth. Hi, Representative Bell, go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Thank you for taking my call. I am a rookie legislator, just having completed my first session. And as background, the reason I ran for the legislature was that I, about 10 years ago, took a canoe trip. We put our canoe in and Route 9 up in North Yarmouth, and we paddled down the Royal River all the way into Elm Street in Yarmouth, where we're stopped by the second dam in the river. And at the end of that wonderful journey, we looked at each other, my friend and I, Bill Gregory, and we said to each other, you know, how was that experience? And we both said, well, you know, it was somewhat bereft of wildlife. We didn't see, you know, you wouldn't see fish because, you know, you can't see them in the water, but we didn't see turtles. We didn't see birds flying overhead as much as one might think. So we explored that, and we found out that the two dams in the Royal River are causing, they're blocking the life, the sea run fish from swimming up the river. So over the last 10 years, I've been active with a group here in Yarmouth called the Royal River Alliance, and we've been trying to study the river and see if we couldn't find out how we could perhaps remove the dams or at least improve the fish passage. And here we are now 10 years later, and I'm now in the legislature, and I was able to pass a bill this past session, the first bill that I was able to pass, and it's to study dam safety. So the state of Maine, and I must apologize up front that I wasn't listening for the first half hour today. I was busy on another call. But the state of Maine has over 1,000 dams, and we have a rather limited dam safety inspection program, and to the point where the dam engineers of around the country have given Maine a grade of D+ for our dam infrastructure in terms of the safety of our dam infrastructure. So we have an issue here. So my bill that I passed and the governor signed a couple weeks ago is to have an audit of Maine's dam safety program and to see, you know, where that we could improve it, of course, and then certainly one of the outcomes would perhaps be removing some of the dams so that if they're not dams that are serving a purpose, that maybe they should be removed. So that's the bill that I have put in. The state will be, now that it's passed, will be auditing, having this outside audit done of its dam safety program. And we're hoping that the outcome of this will be a reflective look at, you know, where we are and where we should be going forward. And I serve on the Environment and Natural Resources Committee, and I'm motivated to think that we could, like the dams on our Royal River, that we could start to remove some of these dams so that we can restore the health of our rivers.
Well, congratulations, Representative Bell, and thank you for calling in to Maine Calling today. I appreciate it. We'll move on and we'll go to Ernie, who's calling from Chabig Island. Hi, Ernie. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Thanks for taking my call and your guests. I'm a fisherman, lobster fisherman right now, but this will be my 69th year on the water. So I've caught a few and used a few LYs for bait. I would dearly love to see LYs running up and down these rivers, all of them, the way they used to. I used to go down to a place called Nequasset Lake and buy LYs for bait. My concern, though, is having checked out on the computer, on the website, about whether or not there is contamination in the silt behind the dams. What I was able to find out was that I'm concerned mostly about the Royal River dams. What I found out was that one of the test sites was done from a canoe, and I don't think they did very deep sediment cores from a canoe, specifically to look for mercury contamination. If there is mercury contamination behind those dams, it's best left where it is. We had an experience down east where mercury contamination came down the river and closed miles of lobster fishing territory. And I'm downstream from Royal River, where I fish here in the bay off Chabig Island and Casco Bay. And the Also, I'm not the only one fishing here. There's a tremendous amount of new aquaculture salmon growing leases being spawned up towards the Yarmouth River and Lanes Island, Moches Island, northeast end of Cousins Island, Cornfield Point, in that area. And I'm really concerned, as along with a lot of other people up who have businesses up the river, about the dam removal process in Yarmouth. And I'll be the first one to say I'll be fine with it if we don't have mercury contamination and other heavy metal contamination flushed down the river when the dams are removed.
I think that's a great question. Very important question. Yeah, Molly, what is your sense? Are you concerned as well?
Yeah, I just want to thank the caller for mentioning the connection between the river herring fishery and the lobster fishery, because I think that's something that a lot of people don't know, that these native fish are being used as lobster bait, and they're really critical, a critical link in the sort of economy of Maine too. So thank you for that. I think what you raise is really important. And I will say from my experiences working in dam removals and in particular on the Penobscot River, assessment of the sediment behind the dams is definitely a critical piece in sort of evaluating feasibility of something like a dam removal. And so certainly if that's ever being considered, that will be part of the evaluation as far as whether or not the structure can remain or parts of the structure would remain in the river. So it's a really good point that you raise. And as more sort of dam removal and fish passage projects are happening across the United States, we're compiling more and more information through monitoring and research about how best to execute these projects and what are the considerations that we need to take into consideration as a collective, as a collaborative of folks working on these types of projects. So it's a really great question and something to keep raising for sure.
Ernie, thank you so much for calling in. We're going to go to Tom, who's calling from Hiram. Hi, Tom. Go ahead.
Yes. Hello. Thank you. I have been watching as much as I can. I don't know if anything has happened on the Saco River. It's, you know, it rises at the height of land on the shoulder of Mount Washington and has multiple lovely mountain streams that feed it in the White Mountains National Forest. And it's a pristine river in terms of industry, but it has multiple hydro dams all the way down through. I wonder if salmon can ever be brought back to the Saco.
Sean.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. You know, the Saco River Salmon Club and UNE down there are raising salmon and putting them in the lower tributaries of the Saco River. There are quite a few dams on that system. There has been some improvements at the Cataracts is the first dam. And there were some recent improvements there. There's a nature-like fishway that Brookfield built called at Springs and Bradbury. That's kind of helped fish get into those types of habitats that you're talking about. Yeah, the upper Saco River is beautiful and it looks like a great salmon habitat. Unfortunately, there's just so many dams that it's really hard to, you know, each one is, you know, makes it less and less likely to kind of get a self-sustaining run, in particular because salmon aren't doing particularly well out in the ocean environment right now. So there's kind of two big strikes there, but certainly historically there was a lot of salmon in the Saco and there is some beautiful habitats, like you said.
Tom, thank you for your call. Molly, we have just a little bit of time left, but this weekend and next weekend are great times to get out and try to get a glimpse of the alewives, right?
Yeah, the weather is supposed to be really fantastic for much of the state this weekend. I would love to share with folks that Maine Rivers, the nonprofit organization, has put together what they call the Alewife Trail Map. And so you can find that online. And it's literally a map of places where you can go and pack up the kids and the dog and take a little road trip, or just out in your local community to see these fish. It's really, if you haven't seen them before, it's just one of the most magical things that you can get out and do. And there's actually a few places, like in Brunswick, for example, where you can actually go to the dam and see the fish moving through a viewing window, which is really great. But a lot of these streams, you can literally stand on the banks and look down and the water is changing color.
And we put that on our Facebook page and on our web page. Thank you both. The voice you just heard, Molly Payne Wynn with the Nature Conservancy in Maine, also with us, Sean Ledwin with the Department of Marine Resources. Today's sound engineer, KG Akimoladun. Maine Calling produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Be sure to go to mainecalling.org and sign up for our free weekly newsletter. I'm Jennifer Rooks. This is Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.